This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, October 7th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from an Arapaho elder participating in a weekend full of Indigenous arts events and happenings at the Dairy Arts Center. For this first Friday in October, we'll join Boulder naturalist Ruth Carol Cushman as she looks for bears. After that, it's Sports Talk with KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss. And then we'll go to .org, our weekly spotlight on a local nonprofit. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then Connections comes your way. Host Kathy Partridge talks Colorado tax laws with guests Ellie Lapp and Frank Tappy of Together Colorado, and Kathy White of the Colorado Fiscal Institute. As always, the phone lines will be open. At 9:30, Dave McIntyre will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, the headlines with KGNU's Jack Armstrong.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency is allocating another $3.4 million to the state of Colorado for the Marshall Fire recovery. The agency plans to split the funds, with more than half going to Colorado Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management for the firefight and recovery efforts. The remainder will go towards reimbursing the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control for fire suppression. FEMA has thus far provided a total of $35 million to Colorado for the aftermath of the Marshall Fire. A ruling this week by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals deemed the Deferred Action of Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, policy unlawful, effectively locking new applicants out of the protections against deportation. DACA provides a protected, newable 2-year status for qualifying recipients who arrived in the U.S. as children and comply with a list of requirements and regular background checks. Around 14,000 DACA recipients live in Colorado. They are now held in a grace period with looming fear of deportation as the challenge moves through the court system. Colorado State Immigration Director of Forward U.S., Marissa Molina, issued a statement calling on lawmakers to pass a pathway to citizenship. The Boulder Police Department arrested another man involved in the shooting on University Hill this past Sunday. KGNU's Kiara DeMare reports.
Police arrested an 18-year-old on Wednesday on 2 felony charges of attempted murder and misdemeanor disorderly conduct. The suspect, identified as Gabriel Sharma, is in Boulder County Jail held on a $500,000 bond. The Boulder District Attorney's Office, Longmont Police, and the Boulder County SWAT team joined the Boulder Police in a search warrant at Sharma's home in Longmont. Police say they recovered a semi-automatic rifle and a revolver from the scene. Boulder Police Chief Maris Harold said the department will be increasing patrols and conducting other initiatives on University Hill. For KGNU, I'm Kiara DeMare.
President Biden has plans to start pardoning convicted felons with charges involving marijuana possession. KGNU's Christian Garibay has more.
President Joe Biden announced yesterday that he has begun pardoning people in prison for marijuana possession convictions. After years of research and testimony from advocates who argue marijuana has fewer harmful effects than alcohol, Biden says that he is working to reclassify the drug. Maya Wiley, president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, said in a White House press release that reclassifying marijuana to a Schedule I drug will be a step in ending the war on drugs. For too long, the so-called war on drugs has harmed communities of color, said Wiley. This action addresses the deep racial inequities that have ravaged neighborhoods. Most of these arrests come from underrepresented neighborhoods with communities of color. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
The Colorado.gov state web portal is back online after a cybersecurity incident yesterday. The Governor's Office of Information Technology and State Emergency Operations Center got the website back online with the assistance from Statewide Internet Portal Authority. The state's website is actively being monitored and is a collaborative investigation between the state and its partners nationwide. President Joe Biden will designate Camp Hale, near Leadville, a national monument during his trip to Colorado next week. The president's trip, according to the Colorado Sun, comes in time for him to rally support for Democratic U.S. Senator Michael Bennet for his November re-election bid. 10th Mountain Division soldiers trained at Camp Hale before being sent off to battle during World War II. A meeting between Governor Jared Polis, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, and Senator Bennet led to the discussion of the possibility of executive action on getting Camp Hale protected. An anonymous reporter for the Colorado Sun confirmed the president's arrangements on visiting the state this coming Wednesday. Today's weather in Boulder shows patchy drizzles before 10 a.m., then a slight chance of showers after 4, patchy fog before noon, otherwise mostly cloudy, with a high near 54. There's a chance of rain, 20%. Tonight, a 10% chance of showers before 7 p.m., partly cloudy, with a low around 39, light and variable wind. Outside the KGNU station, it's around 41 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. The Creative Nations Arts Collective is hosting its second annual Indigenous Arts Market and Festival at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder this weekend. It will include a showcase of Indigenous traditional and social dances, short films, a concert, and theater performances. The events will take place in the run-up to the celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day, which became a federally recognized holiday last year. It also comes just days after federal officials announced the acquisition of nearly 3,500 acres of land to expand the National Park Service's Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site in Kiowa County.
The significance of it is that we can encompass all the area around the site. And it also gives the Park Service a chance to provide a better facility for the public to go and see where this event took place.
Fred Mosqueda is an Arapaho elder from Oklahoma who has been working as a tribal representative in public education efforts and in talks with officials. He was at Wednesday's ceremony at the Sand Creek Massacre site and is part of a group that will present Remembering 1864 from Fort Chambers to Sand Creek, The Future is Now, at the Dairy Arts Center this Sunday. It's an oral history project of singing, storytelling, and dialogue. It connects the dots between the massacre at Sand Creek and the Fort Chambers garrison in present-day Boulder County, where U.S. troops trained for the attack.
We do this so people can know our history. What happened at Fort Chambers? Why is it important? What happened? You know, what's the trail? What was all going on in Colorado? Why were we there instead of in Cherry Creek where we started out? This all will be told, you know, and they can ask questions of the tribal members who are related to those that were at Sand Creek.
The Sand Creek Massacre was a turning point in relations between this area's native inhabitants and the white settlers that had been illegally establishing homesteads in lands protected by signed treaties. The discovery of gold in Colorado created an additional financial incentive for land grabs through violent displacement campaigns. U.S. Army troops trained at Fort Chambers attacked what was supposed to be a protected encampment of around 750 Cheyenne and Arapaho people. Of the 230 people killed on November 29th of 1864, more than half were women, children, and elders. While the wounds from the massacre run generations deep, Fred Mosqueda says the oral histories that have been passed down also have the power to heal.
And I think in telling and educating our younger ones to what happened and to show them where we're at today tends to heal, tends to not. It's still, you know, when you go to Sand Creek, you're going to feel this feeling, you know, of dread, almost like that's what I always feel like. I'm really sad there. But, you know, it doesn't change for me. But maybe for the younger ones coming after me, maybe they'll be able to see it as the triumph between tribes and the United States government, and that they're understanding finally our people, and that yes, we are people. Yes, we can do things to help tell this story. And in doing so, we become better, you know, along with everybody else.
And it's not just the descendants of victims and survivors who stand to benefit from greater knowledge of this area's history. Marion Murphy works with local farmers and sustainable agriculture initiatives in Boulder and is a member of the Remembrance Planning Circle organizing the Remembering 1864 event.
This is an opportunity for me to heal myself personally. So that is what drew me in. Now that I am learning more about it, of course, I see many ways in which I can continue to contribute. But right now it is just that we are part of a group called the Remembrance Planning Circle. And we have put together this event, which will happen on Sunday from 3 to 5:30, with some time afterwards to mingle, have a meal, and ask questions, and really allow people to emotionally absorb what has happened here, and also really to think about our future, because that is where we're headed, the future, which should be much more community inclusive opportunities for everyone.
Tess Eckert, also a member of the Remembrance Planning Circle, was born and raised in Boulder, but says she did not grow up learning the history of the area's original inhabitants.
I think for me, the urgency of this event for everyone, whether they're Indigenous or not, or interested in Indigenous history and rights or not, is really that it has to do with the bigger story of our humanity and also the crisis that we're facing on the earth right now.
Some say that a step towards righting the wrongs of the past must involve the return of stolen land. The Sand Creek Massacre Historical Site opened in 2007 on land privately purchased by Jewish casino owner Jim Druck, who drew parallels between the genocide of the Holocaust in Europe and the mass murder and displacement of Indigenous people within the present-day United States. Druck deeded the land to the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma, which created a trust with the National Park Service. In Boulder, the open space around the Fort Chambers site is also a topic of discussion for land back. Some area cities have either signed or are exploring sister city arrangements with the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. Last year, the city of Longmont signed a sister city agreement with the Northern Arapaho Tribe of Wyoming. Authorities in Broomfield have also started similar discussions.
We want to be thriving. We want to be part of the communities. We want to be partners with Colorado and these cities.
Arapaho Elder Fred Mosqueda says active partnerships and the return of land is what he'd like to see more of in the future.
I would love it if the Cheyenne Arapahos were able to somehow work with the cities to become partners somehow, either be in economic development or politically or some way to become partners with these cities in Colorado so that we could have a place to go back to, you know, that would help support our people.
Mosqueda and other members of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma will present Remembering 1864 from Fort Chambers to Sand Creek, The Future Is Now, this Sunday at 3 p.m. as part of the Creative Nations Indigenous Arts Market and Festival at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder this weekend. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is Nature Almanac.
It's October. What's happening in the natural world? Here is Boulder naturalist Ruth Carol Cushman.
And it's beautiful early morning light. The Flatirons look almost translucent with that first blush of rose. Appropriately enough, we're in Bear Canyon hoping to find a bear. Oh my goodness, there's a hummingbird right overhead. Ah, well, if we don't find a bear, at least we have a hummingbird, and it seems a little bit late in the year for them. Oh my goodness, there's a big mound of poop here, but you know, I really think that's raccoon poop, not bear. It doesn't look quite big and splatty enough for a bear, but it's full of seeds. So it's a sign that some animal has been feasting around here. And yeah, that's one reason you can know that bears are around, if you see their poop, which is usually kind of a big, like a platter of poop. 2 weeks ago, I was coming down the Saddle Rock Trail, and there was a bear coming up the trail. I was thrilled, but I didn't really want to meet him in a narrow little canyon, so I crossed on the other side of the creek, and he just moseyed on up his side of the creek. If you do encounter a bear, of all things, don't run from it. Just try to slowly walk away, unless the bear started coming to me, and then I would definitely try to look big and yell and scream and wave my arms. Oh, and a big flock of magpies just flew over. They eat everything and anything, and they're omnivorous. And bears also are omnivorous. They eat the fruit, including very tiny blueberries, apples. They will eat almost anything, including, if they catch them, probably small mammals. But they're unlikely to eat a person.
Ruth Carol Cushman is a Boulder naturalist and the co-author of the Colorado Nature Almanac and Boulder Hiking Trails.
It's time now for Sports Talk, our look at regional sports news with KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss.
Did you know that the original reason someone said, "Thank God it's Friday," is because he got to listen to Sports Talk with Jimmy? Get out of here! Hello and welcome back to the newest episode of Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, coming at you with the latest and greatest in what is going on in the Colorado sports world. If you are familiar at all with the University of Colorado and its athletics, you know one of their biggest rivals is the University of Nebraska. That rivalry is fierce. Both teams don't like each other and the fans historically hate each other. These two teams have been playing each other since 1989, and their rivalry has not just created great moments in their athletic history, but in college athletic history as a whole. But on October 30th, they will be putting that rivalry aside and compete for a good cause, to help those affected by the devastating Marshall fires from a year ago. The University of Colorado Athletic Department has been working closely with the Community Foundation of Boulder County. The Community Foundation of Boulder County is a foundation that helps the community in its short and long-term needs. This time, they have worked with the city government, businesses, and private donors to put together this game where all proceeds will be going to the Boulder County Wildlife Fund. We all know about the devastating Marshall Fire that took place in 2021. It was the most destructive fire in Colorado history when it comes to property damage. The Boulder County Wildlife Fund is an organization dedicated to helping those victims of those fires rebuild and get their lives back. Since its inception, the fund has received donations from over 77,000 people and has raised $40.6 million, and you can help too just by going to get some entertainment on the basketball court and supporting your local teams. Ticket prices will be $15 per bench seat, and if you want a chair, that will be $20. The CU Event Center holds just over 11,000 people, so why not come down for a good cause? The basketball on the court will surely be worth the while. Colorado has a solid team this year, and they'll be looking to get back into the March Madness tournament. Playing a rival like Nebraska, you know they'll be gunning for the win. They'll be playing a Nebraska team who has been going through some struggles lately. So you never know what you're going to see. Colorado is currently actually down in the all-time record when it comes to Nebraska, with 72 wins and 76 losses. So you know they'll be looking to get one back this game. And just like that, we are heading towards the end of our program here. And before we go, I wanted to wish John Lindorf a speedy recovery. He recently had surgery, and he's a KGNU staple here. He even helped me produce my first hour-long segment here at KGNU. Get better soon, John. And that is just about all we have for today. I'll see y'all next week. This has been Sports Talk with Jimmy, and I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss, on KGNU.
Have you ever wondered where your local industrial composter is? And how far is it? Well, here's what recycling expert Rosie Briggs had to say on this week's Recycling Recap.
It's currently called it is called A1 Organics, and it's out in Weld County. You may have heard of some efforts to try to get a community composting facility, and that's still something that the county in EcoCycle are looking into. It's, to my knowledge, about 100 miles round trip.
Well, folks, you heard it here. That's all we have for this week's Recycling Recap. Thanks for tuning in. Support for this series comes from the Boulder County Zero Waste Funding Program.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Hi, welcome to KGNews.org. This is Chris Schultz, and I'm here with Rob Lee Andrews from Community Works. Rob, you want to tell us a little bit about your organization and what you guys do?
Absolutely. So I'm Rob Lee Andrews, the president and CEO of Community Works. We do job preparation, job placement for our target populations, who are folks that are formerly incarcerated or currently incarcerated, individuals that are receiving temporary aid, folks that are 50 plus and veterans. We do that in a couple of ways. So we do job preparation and job placement for those target populations. We work on pre-apprenticeship programs and registered apprenticeship programs to help get those folks to the middle class. Our largest population are the folks that are receiving supplemental nutrition assistance. That's our largest population that we serve, and a population that I grew up being on food stamps, and then worked in work programs throughout Colorado. So we have seven sites. Some of them serve different populations, and some serve the same population. It just kind of depends on what market you're in is going to determine who you serve. We work with local small and to large business owners to help place these folks directly coming out of our pre-apprenticeship courses.
How do businesses engage with you?
When we go into a new environment, we normally hire folks from that environment. Then second, we'll collect data based on what the community needs. So that's going to be based off what the business owners think that they need for folks and what the labor market says they need for folks. We put that data together. We create a course. The second way to connect with us is through our Anchor Academy, our web-based mobile app where folks can go on there and take our trainings. And also employers can sign up through our web portal to look at participants that are currently in our programs or have graduated, what their training looks like, what badges they've received.
And then there was interviewing skills, resume writing, and helping folks find jobs after their training.
So that's a part of the courses. So we'll take you through a complete job preparation course. So during that time, you're going to learn the hard skills and soft skills. The soft skills portion is part of the interviewing, how to fill out an application, writing a resume. Also includes things that are specific to that industry, such as if I'm in construction, those folks need to show up 10 minutes before it's time to clock in, have their belt on, their boots strapped, and be ready to go. We'll then place you directly with an employer. We make relationships with our employers so that we can pick up the phone and give them a call when we have a person that matches the skill set they're looking for. One of the things we do is we help remove barriers to employment. One of the ways we do that is by receiving professional clothing from folks. So if folks want to donate, the first way to donate is to give clothing that you may not use anymore or slightly used to our professional clothing closet. The clothing closet consists of suits, interview clothes, clothes for construction, clothes for retail, all the clothes that you would need that is lightly used. Another way to donate is going to our website, www.commwrks.org, going to the donate tab and filling out a form to volunteer. We always need folks to help with that interview process, help with our clothing closet, and then we can also use help with job placement. And lastly, donating in a monetary way. So go to commwrks.org, click donate. There's a donate button there that allows you to donate as much as you would like or as little as you would like. It also allows you to become a monthly donor. And I think that's the important piece that we would love to see. We're looking for monthly donors, $20 a piece. That, in turn, helps one participant per month get supportive services they need in order to go back to work. That means they get the boost that they need. That means they get the outfit they need. That means they get all the resources they need to go back to work and be able to be a productive citizen.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more.orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jack Armstrong, Kristen Garibay, Kiara DeMare, Shelley Schlinder, Jimmy Searfoss, and Chris Schultz for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for Connections. That's going to be coming up after the BBC. But first, a few words from our underwriters.